Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 34 of Spellbound Salem Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Bridget the Goblin of Paragem, or Weird Beans, or wherever the hell I'm from this week, Mars, along with my co-host.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Vitka, Mike Vitka from Spellbound Tours in Salem, Massachusetts.
Yes.
We are here. It's been... kind of an exciting day. We are recording on the day when our current president was supposed to be saying something about those UFOs. Mm-hmm. Although nowadays they're calling UAPs for unidentified aerial phenomena.
I don't want to hear
them. You don't like UAP?
I like UFO. I'm old school.
I mean, if you're old school, call them flying saucers. I like that one better anyway.
I do too. Flying saucers.
Yeah, the idea, though, was they changed the name to make it less silly sounding. They thought that UFO has a connotation with abductions and cattle mutilations and
I felt like
crazy people and trailer seeing stuff.
Maybe
but I think
classify the Chinese balloons in there.
Well, that's the problem. Well, no, UFO. Unidentified flying object, that's anything in the sky. Right. Unidentified aerial phenomena, kind of the same, but I guess that leaves it open for ridiculous things like swamp gas on the balloons.
Mm.
So here's the problem.
Yeah.
The first things that did come down were identified as Chinese balloons, mm-hmm. probably spy balloons or something.
Oh, for
the
sure.
The subsequent, at least three objects that were taken down were said to not be Chinese. They were said not to be spy balloons. They are currently still unidentified. And I would hope they're alien, extraterrestrial. Probably not, but I'd like to think that.
Mm.
But today, the White House press briefing, the woman who was doing that seemed very nervous. It started late. She said she had to literally run to get there. And almost everything she deflected. And then most of the questions ended up being about normal governmental things. They spent more time talking about the president's colonoscopy than they did about the aliens. Very disappointing.
So you were just watching because you thought they were going to be talking about UFOs, right?
They were supposed to. That was what it was promoted as.
They've been doing it several times. They've supposed to have had this conversation to release these documents, and it hasn't happened yet. They keep saying they're going to. I don't think this is the first time, though.
Well, she was using some coded language to make it sound like, to put ideas in her head as to what it was. She kept saying they were not Chinese balloons. We don't know if they were commercial items.
Mm-hmm.
She was just deflecting and saying things that we could latch on to. They're still very unexplained, and the president's subsequent address was just more of the same.
Butt stuff.
Very disappointed.
I said butt stuff. Sorry, I was talking about his colonoscopy. But
Oh, no, they really did.
That's insane that they would even talk about that.
Oh, well, yeah, they were saying he was fit for...
fit for shit.
Pretty much, yeah. Talking about his general health and what happens.
Cap the age of the president. Like, I think how there's a minimum age, like you have to be at least 35, I think they should have a maximum age.
I kind of agree. I think there could be special special exceptions made to it. But, yeah, I really don't think that discussing the president's colonoscopy is appropriate when we're supposed to be talking about aliens.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think there's so many things that you can't believe, which is kind of the theme-ish of today's episode. The theme is kind of like believe it or not. So here's the thing. So let's talk about UFOs. We didn't talk about UFOs. And then we were kind of doing the... we do a brief, you know, before we start recording. And we had walked into a conversation, kind of believe it or not conversation again, which goes along with then the other thing that we'd already planned on talking about today. So... yeah, so no UFOs were announced today, and then we just so happened to talk about, I don't even know how we got into talking about Gallows Hill. Oh, because you went up there.
One more thing on UFOs, though. Oh, this just came to mind.
Yes.
If anybody listening, if we have any talented musical artists out there, I would really like somebody to make a UAP song, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, set to the music of the WAP song.
It could happen.
Yeah.
It could
happen. Somebody make a UAP song happen.
That's an assignment for the TikTok TikTokers that are listening. Definitely could do. So WAP, but a UAP. Yeah.
Big. WAP, WAP, WAP.
I hate that song. so cringy.
And here we are talking about it, what, 2 years too late? Or how, we're old. That's our relevant...
Now she's seen a doctor for the WAP, because that's...
Relevant cultural reference from 2 years ago.
Yeah, but I'm old, so I'm always behind the times. And I'm in the Midwest, so we're always like 2 years behind. It's fine. Well, speaking of something that was years behind what we were talking about before, Proctor's Ledge, what it was identified in 2016 from 1692. So I guess y'all ain't too much faster out east.
Yeah, what you said was interesting. You were talking about how when you went, was it your medium friend Linda, you went up there and you didn't feel... Well, particularly drawn to any location there?
We were visiting, because we were talking about like... confirmation. First, we started talking about things in the ground, and then I was explaining uranium, since I apparently now have a radon problem, and I'm going to get lung cancer if I don't get a mitigation system. But so we were talking about things in the ground, and then it made me think of Proctor's Ledge, and then I was also talking about affirmatives that I got with, there's a few of us visiting. This was last March, well, 2021 now, all the years blur together, but... and talking about affirmatives we were getting from a conversation that we had at Turner's, where Bridget Bishop actually, we think to be her to have joined us briefly. And so, then I started talking about, kind of Gallows Hill and Proctor's Ledge. Well, all that being one pasture before. Now there's a lot of houses and it's hard to envision it, but when people got taken to the gallows and it's up past the skate park, you know, the ballpark up there, Gallows,
yep.
It really was part of that same pasture where Proctor's Ledge comes out, correct?
Right. That whole area kind of counts as Gallows Hill. Mm-hmm. I know we discussed in the past the topography of it, why the river doesn't go quite by it anymore, why some of it's flattened out and built upon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, through the years, people, both the paranormal investigators, mediums, and real historians, all have felt drawn to different parts of Gallows Hill. I know the other night we were talking to our old friend Molly Stewart, the Spellbound originator, and she was saying that when she went to Gallows Hill, she and her dog immediately felt drawn towards the top where the water tower is. And this was way back before it was made official that the bodies were not dumped up at that precipice.
Right.
But that was the area she was drawn to, and she got some pretty impressive photographs. I know personally, I've always been kind of drawn to the area near where the memorial is, and I've also gotten some interesting images and seen some pretty intense reactions from folks I've taken up there.
Right. They're two very, those places feel very different to me. And when people think of Salem, it wasn't just 1692 where they were hanging people for witchcraft. There was also other hangings going on for many other crimes. And so it was after being at the Medieval Torture Museum in Chicago a couple weeks ago, I think hanging was probably the easiest way to go based on some of the shit I saw there. I would be like, just give me the rope. But I feel that, we went up to Gallows Hill. I had already been to Proctor's Ledge. I had been up in Proctor's Ledge. I know I was supposed to go there. I was very respectful and careful. I went up there for a different reason, which I'll explain in a second, but I've also been up over to Gallows Hill. What we were looking for at Gallows Hill is we wanted signs or direction that there were bodies thrown in the ground, because what a great travesty if these victims are just, you know, in this mass grave, which would be hard to detect. And I feel like they would have picked up on it by now if they were in the ground. Like, there would be some sort of group or agency or something that would have a vested interest in locating these bodies. And again, it's super rocky terrain. Up there is rocky, but there is one odd part of the ground that sounds hollow when you walk on it. And it's that is weird. It's a very interesting area. It's an eerie feeling, but the eeriness is tied to a bit of what I think that I identified and other people that I've been with up there have identified as more residual energy. There are some rituals that go and pay respects to the victims, you know, for being murdered due to believing that they practice witchcraft. So they're witches that have rituals that they practice in that area, which, of course, Molly mentions in an episode that in one of the previous two episodes that, you know, the spirits, like, you know, approve of them kind of going up there and just kind of paying their respects in that manner. But I didn't get anything like that there was burial grounds there. The residual energy seemed to come from other people who had been up there either doing the rituals or other people who had been up there looking for them. So, and not necessarily from the victims. Now, the funny part is, we have weird dynamics of people that we investigate with and people that practice and believe in all different things. That's also why I love my group, is because we don't always align on beliefs. That's just the reality of our group. And so we have different ways that we approach different things. Sometimes we'll do investigations and people who are very religious in their time need help crossed over, and they want me and one of the other women who believe in God to cross, you know, just like the Christian God, to cross them over. So we've done that quite a few times. And so other times they have other beliefs, or they don't care. They're not rooted to one or the other, and it doesn't matter. But when we were coming down through we were wandering through the trees up there, and a girl in a white nightgown or white little, kind of like a dress. It would have been dated more Victorian, not 1600s. This would have been like later 1700s. She was hiding in the trees, and my friend says to her, "Oh my God, what's wrong?" And she was like, "Oh, the witches." And she's like trying to whisper to my friend from like far away that she's scared and she's hiding and by the witches. And my friend's like, what do you mean? And so she didn't realize, like, she didn't make the connection right away. And then she's talking about our other friends that were with us. And we're like, no, they're with us. They're fine. And the girl was so confused that we were, I don't know, cause she could sense something from us. I can't see her. This is me, sensing her, but communicating through someone else who can see her. She couldn't believe that we could all be kind of together. And so that was very interesting. And then when she saw that, she still just kind of, then she just walked off the other direction. But, she was hiding cause she thought the witches were looking for her. So I'm not sure.
Now clarify a little bit. Yes. This was somebody deceased.
Yes. Yes.
Unalive, yep, from the, yep, witch. Presumably from the witch trial of Victorian era. Okay.
Yeah, Victorian era.
And she would have been reacting to the modern witches who'd been going up there.
Oh, no, by our friends that were with us in that moment. Like, it was me and this other girl who were both Christians. And then we have three other girls. One is kind of like a melting pot of beliefs. And the other two, one is a Hecatite witch. And the other one, she just practices a bunch of different things as well. And so all different kinds of beliefs, but she saw them as witches. So she identified our three friends that were with us as witches. And she was
looking
for me. Yeah, she was scared. So But we didn't get any feeling what I wanted from there because, you know, everybody talks about that's, you know, where the hangings took place. But now, an experience I had on Proctor's Ledge was I did go up behind where they put the memorial in. And I just felt drawn to do it. And I felt like I was supposed to go there and pray for them. And and so that's what's led me to a very weird place in my religious journeys, because I'm definitely a Christian, absolutely still believe in God. But it's more of like, some people are now calling themselves like mystic Christians. I don't label myself. I just believe in God, and it takes a lot of different forms depending on what I'm doing. But I felt that I was supposed to go up here and pray for them. And so I went up behind there. It was a really breezy day. And so I thought, nobody's going to be paying attention. They're not going to hear me walking up here because there's so much sound. And I got up there, and it was just as windy. You know, the trees kind of cut, and then the fence comes to a point. So you can't really go anywhere when you get up there. So don't think you're going to go up there, and there's a whole park that you can hang out in. There's nothing there. So I go up in there, and I start saying the Lord's Prayer, but I decided I was going to do it out loud, even though you can speak.
The Lord's Prayer that was unable to be uttered mm-hmm. by a witch.
Yes.
Did you get all of it correct, or did you make
at least twice a day, every day I say it? But
if it was 1692 when you were trying to say that prayer on the hill, you might have ended up in the tree.
I might have stuttered. They've been like, "Shit, Presbyterian hanger." I say the prayer. The wind completely stops. Stops to the point where I stopped talking because it was weird. And then I was like, okay. And then I felt like a bunch of people standing around me. And I was like, I just remember looking over back towards my left. And then like kind of, I didn't move my body, just kind of moving my head. And I'm like thinking I was going to see somebody or people, multiple people. And so then I just continue. And the wind is still like had died. Like it was just still up there. So I come back out. I start walking around kind of where you can see where the path is now. You can see it's worn that goes up between the memorial and the garage. And then I got back. When I came back down below that tree line, it was still just as windy down there. But it was still up in the trees where I was at.
Huh. That's anecdotal for sure. But it sounds like somebody was reacting to, maybe somebody didn't want you to pray for them, or maybe somebody did want you to pray for them.
I think that I feel like that they did, and that they needed, they want, the thing is, witches are, you know, now witches are bigger in Salem. It's a, right. It's, you can be who you want to be there. That's why people come there, is because they feel comfortable. But in the same respects, it's understanding that these people were hanged, and a lot of them were very devoutly religious. And I think sometimes they just need to hear that. And so it was my way of paying respect to them as Christians. And it wasn't to take away from anybody who practices any, you know, type of witchcraft or, you know, occult beliefs. It's not, I wasn't there for them. I was just there because I felt I was supposed to go pay my respects in that way. And just kind of that whole interaction just really like took me aback a bit, because just with the stillness and it just feeling like I was surrounded. I didn't feel like scared. I just thought people were walking up on me. And then I asked them, I said, did anybody come up here and go a different way? Cause I had four people with me, and they weren't going to go. It was like my mother and like sister-in-law and stuff. And so they said, no.
I remember when they came.
Yeah. I was like, it was just weird. And they're like, well, what happened? I was like, oh, there's just no wind up there. And they're like, at all. And I'm like, nope. And then I just left it at that. And you know, they're not into the shit. So I didn't get, you know, I don't talk about that stuff with them, but so yeah, that was just an interesting experience. But for lack of a better word, my gift is like intuitive reading, things, situations, people. And from what I gather is I think that I have an idea of where they're at, just from my experience in these two areas. And I think that we'll never identify them because of where they're located. And people would be pissed because I believe that they are under the houses.
Now, you don't have to say exactly which houses while we're recording. Mm-hmm. But when you visit in the spring, I'd love to go up there with you and have you point out which ones you think they may be under.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. Yeah, there's definitely an area of homes where I believe it to be. And it would make sense, you know, where the ledge is at. And again, hangings happened all over that meadow, right? That's kind of just what that property, that's just what it was.
Well, hangings were relatively infrequent. I mean, it wasn't like...
Every day we're paying someone at high noon.
Percentage-wise, it's way more than we do today.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like a daily happenstance. It was still infrequent enough that that it would be a big event. Everybody would come out to see. One of the hanging offenses in Puritan New England, which I came to find a lot of references to when I was looking at books detailing crime and punishment during that era, was apparently the Puritans had a big bestiality problem.
Oh, God.
And not only was that considered rightfully to be really gross, and they also made it religious, like it was an affront to the God they believed in, and they were also legitimately afraid that the offspring could be created and you'd have these horrible, deformed animal people result as the union. So if you were caught in a compromising position with the livestock, you might have ended up on the hill.
I had never really heard of that.
There's a couple of books there. You can find them in all the gift shops and stuff. One is called The Naked Quaker, and the other is, it's right on the tip of my tongue, something like Wicked Puritans. I'll check my shelf. I might have an extra copy, and if I do, I will certainly forward it on to you, because I think you'd get a kick out of it, reading through the legal proceedings of Puritan New England. People weren't any better than they are today. They were just dumber.
Yeah, you know, lack of access. There's a TikTok trend going on, and it's where you do something and it says that your ancestors see you doing something and they say, hey, what are you doing? And the one is like this beautiful black woman and she's reading a book, and it's like, my ancestors see me reading a book and they say, what are you doing? And she's like, just reading. And their ancestors are like, oh my God, like they're proud because of. And there was another one, there was a girl that was speaking Irish and her ancestors are saying, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm speaking because I'm Irish. And so you think about some of the things like they aren't, a lack of knowledge due to a lack of resources now. But the thing is, look how stupid people still are, and the world is literally at our fingertips.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said stupid. I should have said they just had different attitudes, I guess.
No, I definitely mean that.
Okay, we're just as dumb as they were back then.
Oh yeah, no, I'm pretty ignorant to a lot of things, and sometimes it's intentional, and I'm just like, I can't know about this because the world of paranoia is real. But I feel that, I wish we used our tools for like better things than what we do, unfortunately. But that's I could do a whole ass episode on that. But so speaking
like of tracking down a UAP.
Yeah, I'm looking at a map too of Salem, and I'm going to actually just mark the neighborhood and send it. So I think that there's a lot of things in Salem, which brings us to a topic that we had planned on talking about today.
That's a good segue.
Thank you. Something that like is maybe it's thought to exist, maybe it's not. But Mike, I'm going to let you lead into this because I have heard nothing of this. And well, until now-ish.
I'm surprised you hadn't heard this because you're sort of like a Salem connoisseur. You love Salem. You know so much about Salem. And so honestly, I'm glad that this is a new topic to you.
Yeah.
And what we're talking about right now are the infamous underground Salem tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, usually if somebody finds out about the Salem tunnels, they learn about them as they're out, just, you know, going about their night in Salem, and they overhear a tour guide on one of the ghost tours, not spellbound, talking about how underneath the city streets in Salem, there's a vast underground network of tunnels, intricately built under the cover of night. These tunnels stretch all the way from the waterfront to the downtown area. The tunnels were used by the wealthy merchants of Salem to smuggle goods past the watchful eye of the customs house and avoid taxes. They were also used by pirates. They would get people drunk in the bars and then knock them on the head and drag them unconscious down through the tunnels. And once they were in the tunnels, they could do whatever nasty things they wanted to them. They could rob them, and they could also bring them to the ship where they'd kidnap them and force them to work on the voyage. Now the tunnels have been bricked up, and everybody in the city has been sworn to secrecy about them. But sometimes if you walk right past the sewer grates, you can hear tortured screams from the tunnel ghosts.
Ooh.
Okay. Clearly, you could probably tell from my tone that I wasn't taking that seriously. But that's basically the tale, is that during the Golden Age of Sail, the extremely wealthy Derby family, from the line of Elias Haskett Derby, the first millionaire in the New World, the Derby family who had the beautiful old town hall built for them as a mansion, they were involved heavily in smuggling, and they built these tunnels, used them for smuggling. Now they're all bricked up. It gets even more complicated. There's one particular local character who has convoluted a whole plot which has something to do with the vast conspiracy in the Federal Reserve and the gold standard and all that. And that just made me immediately fall asleep.
Well, you know, and I could see how the rumor could start, though, because to be fair, many towns, you know, that were bustling in a certain era or even ours here in the area that I live in, they were from pre-Prohibition. We have tunnels here that, you know, people have been in. It's documented. If you know the right people, you can access them. They call them the catacombs now. So they do exist. So I could see how the rumor could easily start.
Well, there's a little bit of truth to the idea of tunnels in Salem. There are absolutely maintenance tunnels. I was talking to a good friend of mine last night who is sort of an urban explorer type. And when I told him I was going to be debunking the tunnels, he was like, oh, there's tunnels. I've been in the tunnels. And he certainly has. Those are tunnels that are disused, but they were tunnels that were documented when they were built. And they were for things like putting boilers beneath buildings and for one building being linked to the building next to it so you didn't have to go outside in the freezing, freezing cold. These are all there in the architectural plans. You can see them. No one's been sworn to secrecy about them. And they're just kind of there. And they are real, but they did not go all the way to the waterfront. They did not come up into the basement of the old town hall, and they're small. They're just building the building or underneath a place so that workmen could do their thing.
So, hear this. I'm not advocating for tunnels.
You're pro-tunnel. For somebody who was praying to those poor witches on Gallows Hill, you should not be the devil's advocate.
I play devil's advocate all the time. It's one of my favorite roles. But if you think about how they filled in the harbor, right, like they did it in Boston, they did that in Salem too, correct? Like they filled in the harbor.
Oh, certainly, yep.
So it would have been easy to build tunnels if they were going to do that because they made the land out of water, essentially.
But that's totally true, that a big portion of Salem is landfill. Mm-hmm. But consider the amount of people it would take to build these things. Could you imagine not one person at the time cracking and saying something to the officials?
It depends on if it's the... Okay, so our local ones, I'll make the story short because we're trying to stick to Salem, but our local ones were due to, we had a local gangster named John Looney here, said to be the only man that Al Capone was afraid of when he was running Chicago. And this gangster here used these tunnels, the original coal tunnels, to smuggle prostitutes and booze during Prohibition. And then he still, you know, they smuggled prostitutes for decades here. So, into an actual building that I investigate all the time or frequently. And so people were scared enough of him that they really didn't roll on him unless it was to another, not to the authorities, but they'd roll on Looney or they'd roll on other, you know, crime families to get power or recognition from another one. They wouldn't roll over on them typically for the authorities, because the authorities aren't the ones who are torturing people. Typically it happened by cops, right? But some of those tactics were more common in, with the gangsters. And so if they thought that they had something to gain, they would take that information not to the cops to roll, but they'd take it to someone else. And a lot of times the other family didn't want to mess with this person because they would call them like a, there was a word for it, but like a leak, like the person that was going to leak information anyway, so they could never trust them because they ratted out this other, thanks for the information, but we don't trust you either because you just rolled on them. So thank you.
Now snitches get stitches.
So yes, snitches do get stitches apparently.
So, but these tunnels that you're talking about, the Looney Tunnels, yeah, which is such a wonderful name, the Looney Tunnels, they were secretive, but they weren't unknown, right?
Correct. But nobody used them. Yeah, they were under the properties where you're not going to have the... They were ran, basically, the access was restricted by businesses. So that's where they would come out to. I believe a lot of the public access only was down to the railroad. So they weren't for the cops. I don't know if the towns ran them or the railroad lines, but I'm assuming it was the railroad lines because of the way the access was under the businesses, and so it seemed to be more of a private thing, provided by the city, ran by the businesses.
And there's record of these, right?
Absolutely.
Like if you look,
yeah,
at the people's personal effects and arrest records and whatnot, I'm sure there's records of them.
Yes.
The problem with the Salem tunnels is there is no record of the smuggling tunnels up until fairly recently. No diaries, no arrest records, and Salem was incredibly literate. This part of the country has one of the highest literacy rates anywhere, going back to the Puritan times, because the Puritans were obsessed with the idea that everybody be able to read the Bible. Everybody was supposed to be able to read the Bible. Hopefully people are going to be able to write. We touched a little bit on that when we discussed Giles Corey a while back, because he couldn't write, and that was, you know, another notch against him. And as the Golden Age of Sail came about, people were even more educated. Everybody was supposed to be able to read and write. Diary keeping was very important. There were people like Nathaniel Hawthorne. We talk about him because his books became so famous, but so many people in Salem were keeping diaries. And there are mountains of old Salem ephemera in collections here at the library, at the Peabody Essex Museum, and not a soul mentioned anything about these smuggling tunnels until maybe 15 or 20 years ago. They must have been the best kept secret in Salem if they were to exist. And smuggling certainly existed in Salem. This was a port city. Trade was coming in, goods from around the world, but it would have been much, much easier for somebody wealthy and powerful like Derby or Crown and Shield to just make a well-placed bribe at the custom house. You could, you know, bribe the guy counting the boxes. You could bribe somebody up top. Right. You could simply throw the boxes into the water a few miles off and have little ships take them in. Building the tunnels would have been the most complicated and ineffective way to handle any sort of smuggling and illegal commerce.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, I could see even that. I do think that you're right. Like, if they... Yeah, I think there would be some... You'd have to have some form of record other than tales because of people who would have had access at some point.
Interesting, too. The gentleman who really helped proliferate the tunnels legends at one point was doing an interview about them, and he was asked by people with scholarly credentials if there was any written documents. And his first claim was that they were all destroyed in the fire, and then he said that, like, his spirit guides had reconstructed them in his head.
Mm.
They don't exist, unfortunately. However, I am totally open to be proved wrong. I will recant everything I just said if somebody will take me into an actual tunnel.
I've been trying to get the stars here, and even if they exist and they're documented, it's still complicated because I knew a lady who owned a cigar shop, and the access under her shop was even in one of the catacombs, one of the rooms under there where there was a bunch of old banknotes. And they're not worth anything today, but they're all still there. Like, laying on
the... That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you think they were hidden down there by the crooks back in the day?
I don't know. Have you ever seen Road to Perdition?
I have not.
Okay, so that's based on here. That's our town. That's the town here where a lot of this took place. And so it was just a movie with Tom Hanks. And actually, they were filming parts of it in Chicago when I worked up there in an old warehouse where there was a recording studio. And they recorded all the alley scenes there. So it was real cool seeing that. But it would be difficult to, if they did exist, it would be difficult to keep them a complete secret. Like here, there's so many access points, which if they were bringing in goods from the harbor and taking them all under town, you know, to evade whatever, they're going to have to be linked to certain things. You don't just make like a long ass tunnel, like, you know, on the southern U.S. border. It's like there's exits and entries. And so I think that there's no, like, what do they say? Two people can keep a secret if one of them's dead. And it's like, there's no, like, for this long to still not have any, like, records of them at all. And no one, like, currently has access. I mean, if you do, hit Mike up. Like, he could even keep it a secret, I'm sure, if you're just like, you can't tell anybody about this, but there is a tunnel.
Oh, yeah. I want to thank my friend who told me about his experience in the underground rooms, but I'm not going to out him because I know he still is doing exploring.
The rooms or the underground rooms?
The underground rooms. the maintenance tunnel things I told you about.
Okay,
the ones that were later. These Salem spooky pirate tunnels, those date back to allegedly the 1700s. The ones that my friends saw were like the maintenance tunnels and the workmen's places. Mm-hmm. And those date to much more recently, like mid-1800s, like 1920s. There's actually an area on Essex Street where there was a very interesting architectural feature that some people were using to claim as tunnel evidence. It was that there were bricks. I'll call them bricks. There were glass bricks in the sidewalk, and those were intended to get light down into the chambers below. And that's totally true. These were on Essex Street, kind of near where the Army Barracks store used to be and the Harrison's Comic Shop is, and that area. You know that little stretch with all the fun stuff on Essex Street?
Yeah, yep.
And yeah, 100%. There were big, thick glass bricks in some portions of that street that served the purpose of bringing light down below. And that's because there were chambers down below, but they were documented, they were part of the structures, and they were not
connected to the waterfront. I'm not saying that these rooms weren't ever used for nefarious purposes, but not in the way that the legend has it.
Well, and I think that they can't even say honestly that, oh, they were there, but now they've all fallen in, because that argument doesn't hold a lot of water, because if they fell in, you'd have, that would also be something you would know, right? Like if the ground's falling right everywhere, because it'd be like the biggest moles ever running under town. Like you would.
Well, I mean, talking about big vermin, that makes me really think that maybe, yeah, sure, maybe they do have a place to breed. There were two huge coyotes in the Ropes Mansion garden about a week ago.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, if I were a smuggler, I would say, get boxes with false tops. I'd mislabel the boxes and say, oh, this one doesn't have pepper in it. It just has nasty old hardtack bread. Sure, you can crack it open if you want, but here's $100 to not crack it open.
Yeah, I think also in our state capital in Des Moines, they have two buildings. They have one with a lot of offices, another one's the actual Capitol building. There's a tunnel underneath, and it used to be just for the governor to go back and forth, and then any like high level government officials between the buildings. But now, as long as you're guided, or you have, because you have to go through like intense security to go into
right.
the Capitol anyway, but. You can still, without going through that security, through one of the other buildings, if you can get access to where, I know it's the Department of Ed is in there, but there's some other things. And you can go into the tunnels and see the, like the old bomb shelters are there from like the 60s, the fallout shelters and stuff. And they're marked still as like bomb shelters. So it's very interesting.
How does that make you feel as an educator that they keep the Department of Education in the dusty old tunnels?
Well, no, they have, if you go visit the Department of Ed, then you can get down to the basement to access it.
Okay.
We took our students from the one building to the Capitol through the tunnels, and it's definitely been interesting going through there a few times. I like being in places I'm not really supposed to be, like everybody can't just go into, right? Like maybe that restricted access type of thing. I used to want to do a... When blogging started becoming big, I used to want to go to all these places and do a blog on restricted access places that I would get into. So I've just always been intrigued by places like that. But if you're listening to our podcast and you have a tunnel and you live in Salem and it's under your house, we need to know.
Yeah, let me in. Show me evidence.
Mike's even keeping secrets from the aliens, so you don't have to worry about him. He won't say shit. They told him all kinds of shit. He ain't sharing. He won't even confirm that they have talked to him or not. That's how good he is. He
knows no,
shit about
no, the no. Well, I think they're just talking. They're talking with their mind and not their lips, so there's a nice loophole. Now, speaking of this, there's a new shop that's opening up. I believe it's called Stardust. And, my neighbor owns it, and when she got the lease there, she sent me some incredible pictures because they found a hidden room in the house, a whole hidden room with a bed that was too big to have fit through the door. The room is tiny, but somebody had assembled a bed in there. There's an ashtray filled with cigarettes that looked like brands from the 1950s, and there were like scratch marks in the wall as if somebody was tracking down time. So yeah, there are hidden rooms in these places, but that hidden room had no tunnel. I think it had a stone wall. And there's also in some of the older houses, this is something I learned from somebody who works for the Park Service, who in the past has had to deal with the tunnel stories. In some of the old basements around Salem, you'll find little, now bricked up and covered up rooms that were basically small walk-in refrigerators. Because think about it, in the days before electricity, you had to keep your food cool in our punishingly hot New England summers. People don't think of New England as hot, but the summers, it can get pretty brutal. And the best place to keep your meat and vegetables from spoiling was down in a nice dark basement. And so some of these arches in the basement and the little rooms, they were just like food storage areas.
Yeah, root cellars.
Yeah, they were basically root cellars. And sometimes folks will move to Salem from other parts of the country who don't have basements, or they don't have knowledge of New England basements, and they see these interesting little nooks, and they may have heard the tunnel tale, and they jump to the conclusion that the dirt refrigerator was a tunnel port. I think the tunnels are pretty much squashed. But what I think is even more interesting than the myth and the truth is where it came from. I really believe that the tunnel stories originated with the author H.P. Lovecraft.
Okay.
Yeah, so I really do think that the tunnel myths started with the author H.P. Lovecraft. Are you familiar with him?
I am. Yeah, I loved the show that unfortunately got canceled, but also knew about him before.
Yeah. So just in case people aren't familiar, H.P. Lovecraft was an author of science fiction horror stories. Early 20th century, he was extremely influential. He wrote for pulp magazines like Weird Tales. And nowadays, his reputation is rightfully tarnished because he was just very mean and very racist. If you read his personal correspondence to the editors of the various magazines and his one or two friends, he comes off like an internet troll kind of guy. He was very smart and very educated, but he was also a real jerk and full of himself for no good reason. And he was obsessed with Salem because he loved the author Nathaniel Hawthorne, which I think is funny because a lot of times Lovecraft gets compared to Edgar Allan Poe. And Lovecraft certainly did like Poe, but Hawthorne was his main guy, and Poe hated Hawthorne. And so even though Lovecraft liked to stay at home in Rhode Island, he did make at least two pilgrimages to Salem. And it's really fun when you read what he writes about Salem. He is in awe visiting the Hawthorne sites. It's like the first time I went to Graceland to see where Elvis lived. He was fascinated with Nathaniel Hawthorne, and he went to all the Hawthorne houses he could find. He also did a lot of research into the Salem witch trials. He recounts in a letter to his friend Robert Howard, the guy who wrote the Conan stories, about a book that was published about witchcraft in Europe and a theory about how perhaps some of the Salem witches really were practicing witchcraft, which, you know, the more I think about it, the more I'm starting to actually believe that. But Lovecraft had done his research. He'd done his literary research. He'd done his historic research, and he was having a great time in Salem. There's a letter where he's describing, like, practically crying when he saw Hawthorne's writing desk. And one of the sites Lovecraft visited was the Charter Street Cemetery, the old burying point, because that's where Hawthorne's great-great-great-grandfather, Judge Hathorne from the witch trials, is buried. And right in the middle of that cemetery is a gnarled up old tree that a lot of folks around here call the lightning tree. The story on that tree is it got hit by lightning more times than should be statistically possible. And it's long been viewed as a power place. A lot of our witches used to go there before the cemetery got locked up at night, and they would do their rituals at the base of that tree because it was such a place of natural energy. It's a really cool tree to see. And what makes it really interesting is that right at the bottom of that tree is a tombstone that describes how the man buried there was struck by lightning. That's what killed him. Just coincidentally, that's at the lightning tree. The name on the stone is Pickman. That name stuck with Lovecraft. And he published a story called Pickman's Model. I believe it was published in 1926, which was a couple of years after Lovecraft's first Salem trip. And in the story, it's told from the point of view of, it's a fictional story. It's a little horror novella, short story thing. And it's from the point of view of an art historian who's working on learning about what he's calling morbid art. And so he pays a visit to an artist in Boston, Richard Upton Pickman. Now, Richard Upton Pickman is considered, and by the way, he's fictional too. This is all stemming from Lovecraft's imagination. But Pickman's paintings are lifelike. They're evocative. They're filled with emotion, but they're also extremely disturbing and disgusting. One called Ghoul Feeding, which depicts what to me sounds kind of like a wolfman eating a corpse, was so shocking that it got Pickman kicked out of the Boston Academy of Arts, even though everybody acknowledged that it was a work of great talent. It was so gruesome and unpleasant that this guy was basically kicked out of the art world. And he has a studio in the north end of Boston, which nowadays is quite prime real estate. And in Lovecraft's day, it was still... So after Pickman is run out of the Boston art establishment, he starts spending a lot of time in a studio in Boston's North End. Now, today, when people visit the North End, they learn about how that area was the site of some of the first Revolutionary War action. They see the Little Italy community, and it's quaint and picturesque and cool. It's also nowadays very pricey real estate. But when Lovecraft would have been in the area, it was pretty run down. A lot of the buildings hadn't been fixed up since they were built in the 1700s, and Lovecraft was very intolerant, and he described the Italian immigrants as being ignorant and ape-like. So just another mark against Lovecraft. So it's a slum area. This is not the kind of place where you would want to hang out, let alone have your art studio. But Pickman specifically picked this location because in the shack he's renting, there's a secret door. And that door leads to...
The tunnels!
And not to spoil a nearly 100-year-old story, but in the end, it turns out that the monstrous things that were driving Pickman nuts that he was painting actually really do live in the tunnels and try to drag people down and eat them.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the tunnel myth comes from, was Lovecraft's story. There is truth to the tunnels under the North End. Pirates did use them, including the humorously named Captain Gunshee. There are newspaper records of these tunnels, totally real, and Lovecraft, who did impeccable research, would have been aware of them. And the way he describes those tunnels, their honeycomb-like nature, is almost word for word the description of the Salem tunnels that we hear nowadays being propagated by folks who probably should know better, but are earnestly telling them because they heard them somewhere, and it's like a big long game of telephone. Lovecraft in his story also mentions Cotton Mather. Cotton Mather happens to be buried in Copse Hill Cemetery, which is in the North End. And it turns out the artist Pickman in the story is descended from one of the Salem witches. And Lovecraft really takes Mather to task, which I appreciate.
Love the North End. Hate that Cotton Mather.
Hopefully somebody could put a spell on him and drag him to hell, which I very much appreciated. So what I think happened is people read that Lovecraft story. They see the Pickman house in Salem. They see the Pickman name. They read the tunnels. There's a little passage where Pickman is describing a house where Cotton Mather lived. And it's not entirely clear if he's describing a house in Boston or in Salem. And that house, of course, had a tunnel entrance. So, yeah, I think people just very easily transposed a story with a lot of Salem elements that took place in Boston and transposed the tunnel narrative to Salem. And it makes sense that the tunnel story really started popping up around the time it did, because in, say, 2010, Lovecraft was having a very big cultural moment. Like, growing up, I knew about H.P. Lovecraft because my friends were horror and science fiction fans. Lovecraft was always popular among like the nerds and the goth kids. But by 2010, he had gotten pretty mainstream. There was a lot of renewed scholarship in his literature. There was also renewed controversy over his racism. Don't look up what he named his cat if you don't want to be made a little sad. Especially if you like his works, just appreciate him as an author, not as a person. But Lovecraft was so big in 2010, even the then current Scooby-Doo series was doing Lovecraft episodes. Almost every night on the tour, I'll see folks who have tattoos based on mythological creatures from Lovecraft stories, like Lovecraft t-shirts, Lovecraft tattoos, Lovecraft inspiring movies. He was all over the place. And it was around the time of the renewed interest in his life and literature that we started seeing the Salem Tunnel stories.
Okay.
So, yeah. What do you think of that? Does it make sense?
It does. And I think it makes a fair amount of sense with the tunnels again, you know. Yeah. I wonder, too. Okay, so think about the network that was created for. This is something like totally like parallel, but still tied. And I'm trying to think of like myths and kind of how this, these stories get started when, with the Underground Railroad, it was started and sometimes the Underground Railroad was literally just a network of paths that people took to get, you know, away from slavery. And it wasn't literal all the time, although there were some underground tunnels. So if you think about historically and the way that the expressions had been used, what would make more sense is if the tunnels were like kind of not literal, right? If they were just a metaphorical sense for like a system, similar to how the Underground Railroad was smuggling people into freedom, or away from slavery at least. And think about this, when they talk about smuggling all these goods into Salem through the harbor, it could have just been a tunnel. It could have meant like a network of the way things, because you know that it was happening.
Right.
That people were bringing in stuff that they weren't paying their taxes on, because we've always been a nation of tax. And so I feel like it makes sense that they were trying to get some of that under the radar, and they probably had a network of systems for how they did it. And then at some point someone took this metaphor and tried to make it into a literal, like they wanted it to exist so bad.
Right. And we know that Salem was a major place for the Underground Railroad and for abolition. That's one thing that's really cool about Salem is how important it was in the abolitionist world. And that's history that people are really starting to appreciate now as people are doing important work discovering that. Howard Street Cemetery, for example, was one of the places, first places specifically set aside for African-American burials. The Hamilton Hall location recently put up a big plaque regarding the abolitionist activity that was going on there. So, yeah, Salem... my mind's blanking on her name right now, but there was a very important African-American abolitionist person who was very important in the Salem State University story when that opened up. So I think with the ties to abolition and the Underground Railroad and Black history, people want to believe in the Underground Railroad stories and like the literal underground aspect of it.
Yeah.
And also, I would say you'd be much more likely if you were escaping to freedom or harboring runaways to hide them in one of those root cellar things I mentioned.
Yes, they're very common here. So,
a friend of mine when I was growing up, but he lived in an old home from the 1700s, mm-hmm. and down in his basement, we were just playing, and we found a false panel on the fireplace, and that brought us to like a tiny little room which seems like it was built for an underground railroad. And you know, being kids, we explored every inch of that room. It was probably only like 5 feet, and we banged on every inch and it didn't open anywhere. If you were hiding people, you'd hide them in a small discreet area. You wouldn't build an actual train line under the earth.
Or could you?
All right, you're a tunnel apologist.
Yeah. No, I heard about a couple of projects they were trying to get going in the U.S. to go coast to coast and have an underground train, like a high-speed train.
Yep.
That would be interesting to me. And then it would become the set of many action movies where they're chasing the bad guys. They're going past at like 200 miles an hour. I like the air. I think I would fly in a plane anywhere before I would take an underground train that took hours to get somewhere. But I wonder how fast a train would be if they dug an underground tunnel from like just all the way across the country. Because that's a fairly long flight. Now I'm thinking about that. That'd be a long time underground. I don't think I could do it.
Yeah, no, that would be, you'd need a lot of anti-anxiety medication to get on down.
Oh, I just need to be hit over the head and like get knocked out.
I just got a notification that I need to run to Jerry's real quick. Ooh, they just got some cool stuff in.
Okay.
I have to say thank you to Jerry's for existing over the past weekend. They've gotten in a ton of old action figure parts, and my table is now covered with that crap, sorting out what goes to who. So thank you, Jerry's. And yes. Also, something cool to check out when you are in Salem, they're just in the process of opening now. The folks who do Black Cat Tours have opened up a shop and little museum thing, which is going to be really, really nice. I got a preview of it, and I think it's going to be fun. It's got a display of, like, cabinet of curiosity kind of things. It's got some tiki-looking things. It's got old Salem artifacts. Yeah, I'm excited. I wish they weren't doing tours, but their museum is amazing. Yeah. I think that's going to be really, really... It's going to be open very soon.
Okay.
It's going to be open very soon.
I look forward to visiting it and checking that out. And so I thank everyone, too, for joining us this week for episode 33. It's kind of a believe it or not episode. That's what I'll probably roll with for the title. And it's just, hey, perception is reality, right? If you think there's tunnels under Salem, there's probably still not tunnels under Salem. But if that's your reality, it's okay.
Well, it's the same as everything. I want to believe, and at this point, honestly, the folklore is becoming just as important as the history. So I'm not anti-tunnel. I'm anti-tunnel being promoted as 100% fact.
True. So like instead it should be presented more as like a lore or a folktale that there could be tunnels under Salem for these
reasons. Yeah, I'd say putting it in folklore is perfect.
Okay.
And one more real quick thing, which I forgot to even mention in the write-up because it's such a silly misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
It's so ridiculous. It's just such a fun, weird misunderstanding. Salem, Oregon. Salem, Oregon does have smuggling tunnels.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were dug up, documented. You can tour down there. And there are a couple of links where you look up Salem, Massachusetts tunnels that Google will take you. The first thing that pops up are links to stories about the Salem, Oregon tunnels from Salem, Oregon newspapers. And if you're just looking really quick, you just see big headline, Salem News, tunnels found under Salem. And even a couple of reasonably well-regarded Salem, Massachusetts organizations have put links to the Salem, Oregon tunnel stories on their pages.
It's the same Google trolls who also direct people to Spellbound Tours who are visiting Oregon, and then they call and say, I can't find your tour anywhere, and you say, where am I at? And they're like, oh, I'm in XYZ, Oregon, and you're like, oh, no, we're on the other side of the country. I'm sorry.
Happens a couple of times a year.
Yes. But speaking of tours, tour tickets are on sale. Tourism is insane still in Salem right now, in freaking February. So when we say get your tickets in advance, it doesn't mean the day of or the day before. You probably need to plan like a week or two or more in advance.
Yes, I'd say
closer to the fall.
Please buy them as early as possible. They're on sale right now, spellboundtours.com. Make sure you visit Bridget's website, Weirdinis, which is just fantastic. I need to go on and order a few more shirts.
Yeah, I'm doing also some more designs tomorrow, so I'm going to spend some time in the morning revamping and getting some stuff up. Hoping to kind of get her off the ground here one of these days. So yeah, Weirdinis, and then any paranormal questions or things you have going on, feel free to contact Paragem Group on Facebook. We'd love to hear about your unfortunate stories so that we can help you with your unseen or uninvited guests that you may have. So again, Spellbound Tours if you're looking to go to Salem, Massachusetts, but also Paragem Group and Weirdinis. It's weird with an enies.com for all of your weirdo t-shirt needs. And that's all and I quick, have.
You got quick thank you to my friend Natalie Zarelli. She is helping me edit that piece on the tunnels that I wrote that we got a lot of information for today. She's a professional writer and editor, and she's going to help whip that into a shape of a thing people would want to read. Also, thank you to my friend who will remain nameless, who did explore the maintenance tunnels and had some fun stories. And thank you to the folks at Atlantic Veterinary Hospital for taking care of my little buddy, Luke. They did a great job. So he's in a cone today, but he's happy and healthy. He just had a little allergy. So and thank you, Atlantic Veterinary, for keeping him healthy. So have a great whatever time of the day it is, and go out there, and I hope you all see some UAPs in the sky.
Indeed, since you got to look for them yourself, because the White House isn't talking about it. All right, everybody.
Nope. Bye, Bridget.
Until next time, goodbye.